Hello, listeners of the Rocketry Show. CG here. In this program, I talk about LiPo batteries. And in the time since this program was first posted, I was kind of continuing my research on LiPo batteries, and I ran across an obscure section of the internet where some folks who are knowledgeable about the chemistry and what goes on with LiPo batteries, I ran across some information that contradicts the common knowledge method of disposing of LiPo batteries. And it actually is some good advice, and that is to not do the saltwater thing for disposal. I mentioned that in this podcast, and until I find out more safer ways of handling that, and there's some ideas, and I'll talk about it in the next episode after this one. But for now, the advice is if you have a bad LiPo battery, take it to a recycling center, and we'll talk about that more in the next episode. I thought I had mentioned that piece of information before this podcast airs for those of you who have not heard it yet, and keep that in mind. So instead of the saltwater thing, take it to a recycling center, and we'll talk more about that in the next episode. And now, Season 4, Episode 1. Welcome to Episode 53 of The Rocketry Show at therocketryshow.com, otherwise known as Season 4, Episode 1. Today's episode is called Straight Fins in Lithium Polymer. Find out what all that is about and so much more. It's an epic workshop episode, and it happens right after this. Today's episode of The Rocketry Show is brought to you by Insane Rockets, E-Rockets, Sirius Rocketry, North Coast Rocketry, and this month's patrons. C. Schramko, L. Rayburn, B. Cook, Stephen Spencer, P. Olivieri, E. Hundell, Charlie Savoy, Gary Rosenfield, S. Feinberg, C. McCauley, J. Thompson, P. Calvin, J. Barbosa, R. Smith, M. Erisman, John Rocket LLC, M. Eilward, and J. Bryan. You too can help support the show as well. Just go to patreon.com/therocketryshow. That's patreon.com/therocketryshow.
You're listening to The Rocketry Show, brought to you by the guys who love the smell of burning ammonium perchlorate in the morning. If it makes fire, smoke, lots of noise, and flies into the heavens, then these guys are all about it. Here are CG, Jim, and the Rocket Noob.
A cool new intro for Season 4 of The Rocketry Show. With me, CG.
Whoosh. Jim. Boom.
And Daniel, the Rocket Noob.
And you still don't have a tagline for
don't
yourself.
Don't have a good splat. Splat. Kerplunk. Chuff, 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 chuff.
Kerplunkers.
Oh, I hate that sound.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we are here. It's Season 4 of The Rocketry Show, and right now we're kind of like nervously tiptoeing forward. We've had, with all the changes we've done to update things, to make things work so much better for you, it was kind of a technological...
A journey.
House of cards. So as a result here, we are kind of cautiously moving forward, and things seem to be okay. So hopefully it is. So what have you guys been up to since the last episode? You fly any rockets or anything?
All kinds of stuff. Let's see. My TARC team this year, the rocketry club that I've got is 20 strong. So I'm excited as heck about that.
Ooh,
the
cool.
Team, I've got one team of 10. I chose the top 10 guys to do qualify rather than run two teams because there's a 10 person limit on a team. I'm going to run with one team this year. And I basically said, okay, guys, get me that form back. And if you get it back in time, you're in. So the 10 guys gave their forms, and the rest of the guys are building other stuff. So it's pretty exciting. And I am nearing completion of my level 3, which I hope to do this November down at TMO in Dayton, Ohio. So thanks to the crew down there, Gary and the gang, for being wonderful hosts, and I'm looking forward to that. So that's a quick one for me. What about you, Noob? What's up?
Well, I actually haven't gotten the chance to fly in probably over a month. The last launch I went to was the FLISKITS annual
anniversary launch, which was early September up in Amesbury, Mass. That was with CMass. We do that every year. Jim Fliss, owner of Fliss Kits, is a club member of ours, and or at least he's a vendor. He comes to a lot of our launches, and so we have a commemorative launch for his the anniversary of his company Fliss Kits, and he provides cake and he pays everybody's launch fees for the day. And that's usually there cool. are a lot of it's great. He gives away door prizes. There are multiple Fliss Kits drag races. Really popular one is the Frickin' Frack drag race. If you're not familiar with Fliss Kits, he does a lot of really interesting rockets. He does some odd rocks. He does some sci-fi futuristic stuff. And he's got this great two-stage saucer called Frickin' Frack. And it goes up. It's if you like two stages, but you don't want to lose your rocket, this is the rocket for you. Because it goes up and it spins on the way up. And it's two stager, and so it's I think there was probably an 8 or 9 Frickin' Frack drag race at one point, which is pretty spectacular.
And that would have been awesome sight.
And we had to keep our altitude kind of low because we had some low hanging clouds, and somebody launched something which would normally have flown way past the cloud cover. We're trying to keep below 1,000 feet. But he had 4 streamers attached to the fins. And when I say streamers, I mean they were probably 50, 60-foot long streamers, rainbow-colored streamers, and they were on these little spools on the ground. So it went up. Didn't go very high. It went probably like 60, 80 feet in the air, and then it got to apogee, and it just drifted down very, very slowly. It was really cool. And that was early September. It was pretty cool. I've had to miss a few launches since then, but I'm hoping to go up to Maine this coming weekend with our friend Joe Barnard and fly some big ones.
There you go.
You know, speaking of Joe Barnard, now I guess he's gone and created a company. His BPS Aerospace, is it?
Barnard Propulsion Systems.
Yeah, that's it.
Barnard Propulsion Systems. BPS.space. Is the website, and you've heard us talking a little bit about his actively stabilized thrust vectoring rockets, and he's actually gone and created a kit you can buy, so you can build your own thrust vectoring rockets, and it's called Signal Avionics, and the very first edition, known as Signal Alpha, of which there will only be 30 for early adopters, is on sale now if you go to bps.space. And sign up. He's going to do a limited manufacturing run, and those will be sent out sometime in the next month or so. And he's giving you all the stuff that you need to do to walk you through it. It is not beginner stuff, so you probably want to take a look at it. He's going to help walk you through it. He's going to help you tune the system and everything. But it is advanced rocketry stuff, but it's very, very cool. So that is the latest thing on Joe Barnard's plate. So that was really surprised when he went and did that, and it's ready to go. So
yeah,
I think we need to do some flight testing of one of those alphas.
I think we're actually going to do it on Saturday. That's the hope, and get some good. I mean, Joe's already got a ton of video, so if you're interested,
right.
Just go to his YouTube channel. We can post a link to that on the Facebook group. But it's Barnard Propulsion Systems, BARNARD, Barnard Propulsion Systems, and a lot of great videos there. Or just go to his website, bps.space.
Yeah. So. Yeah, so it's kind of interesting watching that whole thing progress over the past few years, and now he's got it where you too can play with it if you wanted to. So, cool stuff there indeed. Anything else?
Oh, well, I've been building a few things.
Oh, what are you building?
Well, our friend Matt Steele from North Coast Rocketry sent us little presents a while back. And I got started building the North Coast Rocketry SA-14 Archer. And then got to a certain point where I needed a tool I didn't have. So I set it aside. And then got married, got distracted for a few months, and finally was like, oh, I have to build this. So I got myself a swaging tool, which is a kind of crimping tool. Got it going. So I'm working on that. And I got a really cool new kit from Aerotech called the Monstra, which is a very big rocket kit. And Charlie Savoy talked to us about that. We talked to him originally, and he said he would send me one. And he's sent it to me, and I'm building it. It's the biggest rocket I've built ever. So I'm pretty excited about that. So
that's really cool. You know, I saw some of the pictures that you were posting about when you with the Archer and the little miter box that you got. It's kind of funny because when I built my first Archer, the first thing I bought was that one of those little aluminum miter boxes, so I could do the right angles on the strakes. And I have used that thing in like all the time with the razor saw. I love that little miter box. It's one of the tools that stays on my bench. So I saw a picture of that. I just kind of smiled a little bit when I was like, yeah, I've been there. It's kind of funny that you did it for the same rocket.
You know, it's because you don't, the kit instructions, I mean, you don't need the miter box to do this. But I thought, well, if I cut this freehand, I know I'm probably going to think to myself, am I getting this quite exactly the way I want it? And you know it's a good project when you have an excuse to buy a new tool. And I'd been wanting to buy one of those little miter boxes for a while, and never having had one. I mean, on the one hand, they're all aluminum miter boxes, but I decided to look and see. You know, I just wanted a comparison shop and see what people were saying about it. And I've actually had a few questions about it, so I figured I might as well go ahead and talk about it. I got one from a company called Zona, Z-O-N-A. You can find these little aluminum craft hobby miter boxes. The Revell makes them, and Exacto, and Excel. I got the Zona one, which is a little more expensive because it is a thin kerf or thin slot miter box. And one thing that I've read a lot of people have said about these miter boxes is it's aluminum, and it's easy to accidentally cut into the sides of the slots with your saw. Well, I got this one because, you know, Zona makes all kinds of little hobby saws and woodworking saws, and they specialize in this kind of stuff. With the thinner slots, you don't risk sort of wiggling the blade sort of off center and then cutting into the sides of those slots. So Kirk, who is he's a guy from Southern Ohio, who I believe you guys have gone flown with him, mm-hmm. was asking mm-hmm. me about yep. that. He said,
"Kirk, the weatherman.
Have I cut into the miter box?" And well, it's pretty new. I haven't used it that much, but I find if you're careful with it and you set it in just so. Set it into those slots before you start cutting, you're probably not going to have a problem with that. But also having the thinner slots means that it doesn't have as much wiggle room, so it's going to stay straight. And then another friend of your guys, John, asked me, how is it for cutting body tubes? Well, it's a little too small for cutting body
too
tubes.
Small.
It's only about 7/8. Yeah, it's only about 7/8 of an inch depth as far as cutting goes. And I didn't really get it for that. I got it for cutting other things like plastic parts at a specific angle or wood bits. And I got a couple other projects where I want to make sure I get the perfect 45-degree angle and I don't want to, do it by eye. So I went ahead and got it, and I got a new tool, so that's pretty fun.
There is one thing on the cutting edge of rocket tracking that I would like to mention briefly. I heard wind of... my buddy Andrew Kleinhens down in Southern Ohio was telling me that there's a big thing called the Marco Polo Drone UAV Model Rocket Location and Recovery System. Now, this thing it's no GPS or cell service required, no monthly fees. It has a range of about 2 miles, and it's a complete kit for about $219. It's simple to set up. You have an arrow on your display. It's like a little handheld display unit with the tracker unit goes in the rocket. And it literally will point you into the direction of where you need to go to recover your rocket. A lot of people are starting to talk about this thing. I just heard about it this week, so I did a little bit of research on it. And from everything that I'm seeing online, you can get it on Amazon. It comes as a completely self-contained system, so you don't have to do anything about a ham radio license. You do not have to do any kind of cell service thing with this, and it has a range of about 2 miles and a battery life of 15 days. So it actually is something I'm thinking about. It would be a nice little thing to try out. It's a reasonable price, and it's meant for drones, but a lot of the rocket guys, you know how we are about like repurposing technology. But it looks like it could be something that I am very much interested in seeing it or getting one just to play with it, because it looks really cool. I just heard about that from some of the high power guys that do a lot of tracking and stuff, and they are just buzzing about it. I hear a lot of talk in the street about it. So just something to think about. It's Eureka Technology Marco Polo drone rocket location and recovery system.
Yeah, when you and I were talking a couple days ago, you mentioned that, and I kind of looked it up real quick because I am definitely interested in that topic, especially after seeing Crazy Jim play around with that stuff. And as my rockets get higher and higher, I'm definitely concerned about where to find it. Should I lose sight of it?
And the batteries are rechargeable lithium-ion batteries in the transceiver tag. So it gives, you get, like I said, you get 15 days for this thing to actually put out a signal. So very curious about it. So if anybody out there knows about it or has one, please drop us a line and let me know, because I'm doing a little bit of research. I might just pony up on one of these things just to play with it. But any information that you have would be great.
Cool. All righty. Very excellent. Nothing much happening on my end, just been working on show stuff. And one of the things that you're probably noticing different on the website is a little thing at the bottom that says Little Beth Entertainment Limited. This show is now part of a family business, if you will. Not business as in like Raytheon or anything like that. my brother was created this company a while back to basically distribute his independent films that he would make. You know, local independent film guy, making things around the Northeast Ohio area, making little films and entering them in the film festivals. And he's won quite a few awards with it. And over time, he kind of, because of, you know, some of the health things going on, he kind of backed off from that a little bit, and the company was just kind of dormant for a while. And as the Rocketry Show has been moving on and getting donations from, I don't know if you call it donations, more like contributions from listeners for the Patreon and sponsors and all that, setting things up to be a little more official so that I can keep that money separate from everything else so that it's just easier to keep track of and account for and to do things with. I was using my little company, which is Legato Communications, which is just a little, where I did all my side work under that name. And so I needed something a little more formal. So we ended up merging the two together and putting this operation under that banner, which makes things easier for structuring stuff. And it's not like hasn't been that way the whole time. Jim has been around with us, I don't think he was around for Narcon, but he was around for Tark, my brother. And so Jim has run into my brother several times, and he's been helping out. Him and my mom, which are basically the Little Beth Entertainment, have been helping out the whole time with the show anyway. And I mean, they've been always there in the background doing stuff. So now this just kind of makes it a little more formal. So it's all part of the whole family-run thing with this podcast. So it's kind of cool. So if you see that, that's what it's about. It's not like we're becoming, you know, some mega thing or something. But
and that's great, because Peter's a great videographer and always great to have him along. So I enjoy his company.
Yeah, he's been like a big help with a lot of the some of the videos that have been going on, quite a few of them actually, with the exception to the, like I said, with the exception of Narcon, which we kind of strung together by hook or by crook. And, but for Tark and some of the other things that we've done that you've seen us post videos under, he was been involved with it, even edited some of the stuff. So it's kind of cool. It's more signs that we're kind of becoming a little more cohesive and hoping that this leads to other things where we'll be able to provide a little more content for folks on several different fronts. So we have a great show here for you. We just kind of did our introductions, but we've got a workshop show here with Daniel. So we're going to be talking about a workshop topic, and I'm going to pick up another workshoppy kind of topic, but something I wanted to hit on, and that's on batteries, and specifically LiPo batteries. There are a lot of benefits to them, but there's also a lot of fear out there over the batteries. And I won't say that the fear is not warranted. I would say that a good deal of respect for the technology would go a long way. Sort of like electricity. It doesn't matter the voltage, but respect the electricity. You know, so in this case, well, I guess it's almost the same thing, but respect the LiPos and you'll be okay. So we'll go through a list of things on that topic there in the show. So anyway, on that note, we're going to take a quick break here on the Rocketry Show, and we'll come right back, and we'll pick up, I think, with one of us here. So we'll draw straws while the commercials play here. So we'll be right back right after this.
North Coast Rocketry, one of the first high-power rocketry kit companies ever, takes advantage of over 30 years of high-power experience by a world-class rocketeer. You can look to North Coast Rocketry to expand your high-power rocket fleet. In addition to great kits, North Coast Rocketry also stocks lots of must-have items and accessories for every rocketeer's workshop. Find out more about these kits and other great products today. Go to NorthCoastRocketry.com. And while you're there, don't forget to get their latest catalog, NorthCoastRocketry.com. Advanced rockets that are easy to build, fun to fly, and look great on display.
All right, it's time for Serious Rocketry. Serious Rocketry, since 1998, providing the Rocketeer with great kits, motor supplies, and more. They have lots of products in their ever-growing web store with fast shipping, wide selection, and courteous service. You can also check out the amazing and popular Serious Rocketry kits that harken back to the days of fun-to-build detailed kits that are more than just three fins and a nose cone. And Jim has been sitting back here looking at some product here to talk about. So what do you have there?
I have indeed, and it's considering that it's the height of TARC season and people are doing their flights and getting ready for all that, I thought I would talk about a couple of loads that might be useful for any TARC teams out there. The contest this year has two eggs to go up, so that's about 120 grams right there. And in order to put that much up to 800 feet, which is the altitude this year, it's probably a good idea to try an F-40 or an F-52. The F-40 is a white lightning reload from Aerotech, and Sirius has them for $12.74 a load, which is a pretty good price. It uses the standard 2940 to 120 casing, and it has a lot of thrust. It is a good burning motor, nice thrust curve. If you need something a little bit heavier, the F-52 Blue Thunder is personally one of my favorite motors, but it is got a hell of a lot of kick off the pad. Will take two eggs easily up to 800 if you have all your stuff done properly, and it is also $12.74. The normal price on those loads is $15, so you're saving a couple of bucks there. The other thing is that you could always make sure that you have the same batch for any motors that you have, because there might be some variance in the different batch numbers that I've discovered. So just do yourself a favor and see if you can get the batch number, and Sirius will certainly help you with that.
All right, and Sirius Rocketry's website features real-time stock tracking, which lets you order with confidence from their online store, no having to call or write to see if something is really in stock. And when you're ready to fly, Sirius Rocketry has motors and hardware in stock and ready to ship from Estes through Aerotech High Power. You can ask them about their club specials as well. Visit their website at siriusrocketry.biz and .com. Sirius Rocketry, for the Sirius Rocketeer. We're back on The Rocketry Show at therocketryshow.com with our great new theme music and bumper music and closing music. So a lot of cool stuff going on in the new season, episode one of season four. And
woo!
Yes. And
yeah, nothing gets me in the mood to fly rockets like some good bumper music.
There you go. You know, that's what you're going to need now for the PA, bumper music for all of your rocket launches. And everybody know that it's the new...
Bump, bump. Oh gosh!
Look what we
try to keep bump. A low profile.
Oh, that's all done now. Anyhow, guess what? Yeah. We're up to our workshop topic with the noob. So, noob, what do you have going on?
Oh well, you know, I was trying to bounce around a couple of ideas here, and I figure I should talk. You know, let's bring in something for the the people who are maybe a little newer to the hobby and may not have heard some of these tricks. So let's imagine you've ordered this sweet new model rocket kit. It's got these nice balsa fins, and you open up the package and you're checking everything out. You're looking at the parts and either because of the way the rocket kit was packaged or because of the humidity, you look at the fins and they're kind of curled. They're kind of warped. Well, what are you going to do about that? Fins are supposed to be flat, right? And yes. You open up this package. I mean, myself, for example, I've been trying to get all of the Estes kits that I want and get them out of my system so that I can do other things as well. One of the things that I've done recently is, my very first kit was the Dured Max, and I loved it, and I still love that rocket, but I've gotten to where I make rockets a lot prettier now. And that first one, if I look at it really critically, it's kind of not my best work. It was my first one. And, I go to my club and I see all these other people and they've got these Dured Maxes and they're all really shiny and a lot prettier than mine. So I thought, well, I gotta order another one. Well, I ordered it from Amazon and the first one came and the body tube was all crushed. And the fins were like bent. Oh, you could see in the package. So I sent it back and then they sent me another one and the body tube looked great. All the parts looked great, except once again, the fins were like, they just didn't, I mean, they're not a model rocket supplier. It's Amazon. They sell a lot of stuff. So they don't really know. don't send them the ones with the curved balsa wood. So what do you do about that? Well, couple of options. Companies, like if you call Estes and they're really badly warped, they may send you a new kit or they may, replace them. But there are things you can do to fix that. As long as it's just warped and curled and not like actually broken, you can actually fix those. A lot of times you'll see on the forums, people will ask, oh, I've got these warped fins, how do I fix them? And there are a number of suggestions people come up with. And I decided, well, I'm going to test these out. And so I did a little experiment. So I took a bunch of balsa wood, and it had already sort of warped. It was just some hard balsa stock that I purchased, and it was sitting on top of the pile, and it was kind of humid, and it had sort of warped a little bit. So I took it, and I cut it into chunks, and I decided, well, I need this to be really visibly warped so I can actually see what it has done. So I took each piece, and I painted one side with water. That's what causes warping a lot of times is balsa is very porous. And if one side absorbs some moisture, either through humidity or actual water, that'll go into the cells of the wood and those cells will swell. And if it's on one side of the sheet and not the other side, that side is going to curve away from the moisture. And so you'll have a bent piece of wood. So I took this wood, I painted one side of each piece with some water, I rubber banded them around a dowel rod, and I left them there for a few days so that when I took everything apart, they were just curved and bent like crazy. I mean, you couldn't even make a small fin out of them because they were all so bent. So then I tried a number of different things. So water is what causes warping, and water is often what people will use to try and get rid of the warping. But I decided I was going to use several different methods. So I used a few different water methods. I used a chemical method. And then just as sort of a control, I decided to dry press one. So I basically took one of the pieces of warped balsa, I stuck it under a stack of heavy books, and I left it there for weeks. Well, as you may imagine, the ones that I dried pressed didn't really work out that well. That would probably work for a very slightly warped fin or piece of balsa wood. Just put some heavy books on top of it, and that might work for that. But the problem is, if you really get a bad warp in your fins, then that's kind of the new shape of the wood. So you really need to do something to alter the shape other than just trying to bend it back, because it just wants to, it wants to stay, once it's dried in there, it wants to stay that shape. So sometimes people will, they will actually steam the wood. They'll either hold it over a kettle. I actually went one better. I put it in a, you know, I've got one of those steamer baskets that you might do broccoli or something in. And I stuck it in the, in a big stock pot with water. I put it in there and I steamed it for 15 minutes. So I had it rolling, boil, steam, hitting those fins for 15 minutes. And then I pulled it out of there and I stuck it under the, under a, stuck it between some wax paper, between some heavy and perfectly flat books. And that worked all right. It was surprising to me, though, that when I took the books off, the fins looked great. They looked flat. Well, I should say fins. It was just a piece of balsa. Looked
your
perfectly
test.
Flat. My test piece, yeah. but about a week later, it had sort of curled up again. So it sort of came back.
Oh. Same direction.
Yeah, same direction. It was just, it just didn't take. So then I tried dunking it in water, and I dunked it in dunked a piece in water, and I used different pieces for each piece so I could keep them separate. I dunked a piece in water, and I let it soak, and I let it float in there, and I pushed it down, and I you know, flipped it over so it would get equally wet on both sides. And then I also took a spray bottle, and I took a different piece, and I just spritzed it. Figuring, okay, if I just spritz it really well, do I have to soak it or can I just get away with spritzing it? And those two pieces did pretty well. They didn't come out perfect, but they came out pretty close enough that if, you know, if I had a small enough fin that I wanted to cut out of there, you probably wouldn't have noticed a bit of warping at all. So those were the two water methods. But the one that worked great, and that I had seen recommended before, which may surprise people who've never heard of it, is a window cleaner. I'm talking about the blue stuff. It's either Windex or an off brand. What you're looking for is ammonia based blue window cleaner. What this does is it gets into the cells of the wood, and it does some kind of science.
Magic.
Basically, it's like it breaks. Somebody out there is going to email us and tell us and say, "Listen, noob, you don't understand what's going on here." But it basically, at the cellular level, it breaks down bonds cell walls. It breaks down the fiber. It gets into the fibers and it sort of changes their structure. So when you spray, you take some Windex or window cleaner and you spray the heck out of it. And when you do that, you'll notice it becomes very flexible, the wood does. Then you want to press it, and you want to press it again with as flat of object as you can find. And for me, it's my high school yearbooks, which I never really thought I'd get much use out of, but guess what? They're great for building rockets. So I have two high school yearbooks. I put the fins between them. Now, here's the important thing. I discovered that you do not want to. Sometimes you will press things between two pieces of wax paper. If you're using window cleaner, don't use wax paper. It will soak right through that, and it will destroy your precious memories from high school. I caught it in time. I started. I put it between two pieces of wax paper, and it very quickly soaked through the wax paper. Yeah. Okay. It must break down the wax as well. The ammonia does. But So I actually wrapped it in plastic wrap. Wrap it in plastic wrap, make sure that it's not leaking, and then you're going to press it between books and put multiple other books on top of it. Now, here's a very important thing. If you're using window cleaner to clean a stovetop or a window or something, you're not using that much. But if you are using it to de-warp your fins, you're going to use a lot of it. And you really need to open a window, because it's. I was quite surprised that I got kind of dizzy and a little lightheaded because the smell of the ammonia was so strong. You know, I've used window cleaner to clean windows for, you know, my whole life. But
never but a 55-gallon drum of it sitting open next to you.
Yes, exactly.
for a fin.
So what you do, you take your fin stock, you first step one, you soak it with as much of the cleaner as you could possibly spray on there and until it's basically saturated. Step two, wrap it in plastic wrap and put it under a book. Step three, go back in time and open your window before you start. That should have been step one. So you're gonna leave the fins pressed under a book for a day or two. But now this is the important thing. What happens is if you unwrap them, they're going to feel dry, but they're not dry. Just most of the moisture has moved to the inside of the balsa wood. Now, I learned this the hard way because I did this test and it worked great. And I thought, okay, fantastic. I'm going to do this. And then I went and I did it to some fins. You pull them out. And if you smell them, you'll smell the ammonia smell. But you need to let them dry a little bit further while pressed before trusting that they are ready to go, because some of that moisture is still inside the wood. Mm-hmm. And right. Since you've had them wrapped in plastic, it hasn't evaporated. And what can happen is they can warp even worse.
And I'd imagine you have a hard time gluing them onto anything too.
Exactly. So what I like to do is after a day or two in plastic, I switch to parchment paper, which is great because it's nonstick like wax paper, but it doesn't have that waxy coating, so it will actually wick moisture away from the fins. So it'll actually help your fins dry out. So after a day go ahead.
Well, with that parchment paper, do you just lay that on a surface? I mean, could it bleed through to your desktop or something and screw your desktop up?
Well, I actually put it back between books. And it didn't seem to cause a problem. Because at that point, it's not wet. There's just some residual moisture inside the wood. And it's not like, I mean, you wouldn't want to get the Windex on your books. But it's not soaked. It's just, there's enough moisture in there that it could cause it to warp again. And honestly, it may be that it only started to warp these fins. I mean, this was on an Estrus Patriot that this happened to, and I'm looking at the fins right now. It may only have happened because I set the fins down on the table, and you know, it's the moisture is evaporating out of there. It evaporates out of the one side, and the side that's on the table, it's not evaporating from, and
right.
So it
right.
curves away from that side, right?
Makes sense.
So then when you're done, You should have perfectly flat fins. And one of the reasons you want perfectly flat fins is obviously it looks better, the rocket will fly better. But if you like to seal the balsa grain in your fins and you want to sand those fins, if it's not flat, you're going to come up with, your fins are going to be kind of like unevenly sanded. Like if you use wood filler like a lot of people mm-hmm. do. And you go to sand those fins, if they're not flat, you're going to sand all the wood filler off certain parts, and other parts of the fin, like in the middle, are not going to be smooth because you're going to see those ridges on there.
So much for the airfoil, huh?
So much for the airfoil, right. You just ruined your work. So that works really well. And there was a bonus technique which I discovered when I was doing my Estes Photon Probe. I bought 31 of them, and
yes,
almost all of them, yes,
yep.
almost all of them had slightly warped fins because I think they'd been sitting someplace for a while. And I thought, well, gosh, what am I going to do here? And I thought, you know what? I've never been that good at papering fins, so I'm going to try and do it on this one because otherwise I'm just going to have to cut new fins. So if you like papering fins with actual glue and paper and not with Avery labels, but the moisture from the wood glue, you rub that into the wood, and then you slap the paper on there, and then as the glue dries and hardens, it again pressed underneath books, it makes a nice hard fin, and it will actually straighten out those warped fins, and it'll strengthen the fin because you put paper on them. So mm-hmm. So you got warped fins. I mean, you could always return the rocket, but who wants to do that? Who wants to, you know, and sometimes if it's not that bad, you know, Estes or whoever it is may just send you an email saying, hey, like soak them in water or even try the ammonia trick. It's not something I came up with on my own. It's something I'd seen referenced and I thought, well, I'm going to test this out. And what's the best way to do it? And using the ammonia-based window cleaner really, really does work, and it's really the best way. Other ways might work for thinner or less warped wood.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't happen to have any, you know, you can always spritz it. Like I had a little rocket with some 16th-inch thick fins, and it wasn't that badly warped, just enough that it kind of bothered me. And I spritzed those, and I pressed them, and it was fine. But if you got a really badly warped fin, you want to hit them with that ammonia-based window cleaner. Press them, and you should be good to go.
And
that's really cool.
That window cleaner works great for like sores and
eczema. Just put Windex on it.
Yeah, just put Windex on it, Anna.
Just put Windex
I was
on it.
I was gonna ask you, besides the Greek wedding stuff, do you think it would work on basswood?
Yes. Yeah. My understanding is it works on a number of different types of wood, including basswood. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I'm sort of talking without having looked at it, but somebody, I think I remember reading on some forum that it works better on basswood. That's probably not right. I don't know. What am I saying? I know. Yes, it does work on basswood, but balsa is nice, flexible wood. So yeah, but right. That's the thing that you'll notice. Oh, I remember I actually did some on some basswood, and that's the thing I noticed is the basswood gets really flexible.
You can
bend
interesting
it. Yeah, well, yeah, that's the thing, is you can actually shape balsa wood into different shapes using this method. And there are one of the threads that I looked at on the Rocketry Forum, rocketryforum.com, there was a guy who was he was actually trying to make a fin that was he was trying to make a spiral piece around his set of fins. Okay. It's been a while since I looked this up, so I don't remember the username or what the rocket was called. But he basically, he tried a number of things, and the thing that really worked for him was window cleaner sprayed on the piece of balsa. It was a flat piece of balsa cut to the right shape and then taped around a cylindrical, like a can or something.
Okay.
And that, you know, makes it really flexible, and you can bend it to that shape. And then if you leave it long enough, and it will harden in that shape. So you can use it to bend wood, or you can use it to straighten wood out.
Cool.
Yeah. I'm already thinking
I don't even bother with this. Well, I don't even bother because I have a lot of rockets with slightly, because you find a lot of them with slightly warped fins. And you sometimes mm-hmm. don't notice oh, yeah. it, but most of them are probably, if you look really critically at them, most of them are probably slightly warped. And so I reach for the Windex a lot now, and I don't even bother with, you know, water bottles or steam or anything. I just go right for the Windex because I have a whole bottle of it right here in the rocket room. And, you know, if it's not really badly warped, I'll just spritz it a little bit and put it under, you know, some weight for a couple of days. And then, you know, and it works great. And it's saved me a lot of headaches because sometimes I'll get a kit and I'm like, these fins, they're terrible. What am I going to do? I don't want to send it back again. Like, you know, especially if it's not a rocket vendor. If it's a rocket vendor, they're very understanding. But if it's like, you know, Amazon.com or you know, one of the chains of hobby stores that, you know, they do hobbies, but they're not really rocket people. Right. You know, they're only going to deal with you so many times, and that's really something that's fixable is warped fins, you know.
Very cool.
Very cool.
Very educational too.
And here's Courtney and I thinking about, like, CG and I are like already like trying to bend stuff into the shapes of our minds to our will. You know?
Yeah, once you said that, it's like, ooh. You know, real quick, before I forget, you mentioned the Rocketry Forum, rocketryforum.com. And as part of the support that we're getting from all of you on our show, on Patreon and whatnot, we're kind of paying it forward. So we're like a monthly sponsor of the Rocketry Forum. So we kick some bucks their way to keep that forum alive and well, or doing our part to do that. So thanks to you, we're paying it forward as well as doing our own thing here. So I thought I'd mention that. I forgot all about that until you mentioned it. All right. Well, Noob, great. Great topic. I think you've given us a lot to think about on this show. My brain is already moving, and I can't even talk right. But
you're
man,
twisting and curving around and stuff with that. Get the Windex.
You can make an awesome boost glider with that technique.
I know. I'm thinking about all kinds of stuff.
Oh yeah, some stealth shapes going on.
Yeah, if you have a thing if you have some kind of form you want to shape your balsa to, it's useful for that as well. It's one of those modeling things that people who've been doing this for a long time probably know, and they've probably all heard it. But like, you know, beginners or somebody who's just they've never encountered the problem or never thought to ask, how do I fix this? You know, they may not have heard of it, you know.
Or like me, you think, one day I got to learn how to do that and never get around to seeing what it'll take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, six things on my bench. I think it was four, but it just went up to six for the sake of the show.
Very cool. All right, now it's time for us to take another break here at the Rocketry Show. When we come back, I'm going to go over some tips and tricks and things I've learned messing around with LiPo batteries for a while here. And I thought it would make a great topic to kind of review because for many, they're scary. And and they are kind of scary in a way. Sort of like electricity is scary, but it doesn't mean you to just hide in a corner. Just be aware. Respect the beast. And we'll talk more about that right after this. Our rocketry hobby is kept alive by many great people and vendors. One of those vendors not only puts a lot of effort into supplying parts and kits for our rocketry hobbyists, but is also deeply involved in our local clubs and contest activities. I'm speaking of Randy Bodway and his great staff at eRockets.biz. In business since 2009, eRockets doesn't just stock many of your favorite in-production kits, they also produce many of their own versions of popular out-of-production models that many of you have come to enjoy over the years. All of that is fantastic news, but guess what? eRockets.biz also has many unique rocket kits of their own. Need parts for your own custom builds? No problem. eRockets.biz also supplies the Semrock line of airframes, nose cones, centering rings, motor mounts, and so much more. eRockets has more rocket parts available than anyone on Earth. Check out eRockets.biz today to learn more. eRockets.biz. If rocketry scares you, just go out and buy a train set.
Let's see, 600 for motor casing, 400 for propellant, the airframe. Oh, hi, this is Gene from the Rocketry Show, and I was just adding up all the costs of one of my projects, and man, can it get steep, especially when you're looking for an onboard telemetry or GPS or tracking devices. I just saw one for $3,000, and I'm not sure about you, but that's a lot of money for me, and I don't even know if it's going to provide video for me. Well, that's where Insane Rockets comes in. Jason Cook has created an app available on Google Play for Android that does all of that and more. It's called the Insane Rockets app, and it provides, get this, real-time telemetry. It records video on most Android phones at 1080p. It records yaw, pitch, roll, heading, 3-axis Gs, gyro, barometer, and velocity using speech in real time. And it will even overlay your flight tracking information directly to Google Earth to help you find your rocket when it comes down. Best part of it, it's free. Go out and get it. Insane Rockets app on Google Play Store for Android.
So anyhow, we're back on the show, and we're on our next topic here, which is LiPo battery, kind of a primer, if you would. And
this is terrifying.
Are you terrified?
I'm afraid.
I am so scared.
Are you a scared?
I don't actually. And go boom.
I'm on a diet. I don't think I need this LiPo stuff.
It's relax. In the right hands, it'll serve you well. So,
whoa.
Yeah, anyhow. So my jump into this whole LiPo battery thing came about when, during the early days of dual deploy, when I was getting into it, I wanted to do dual deploy in mid-power rockets. And while today it's fairly easy to do that now. You've got a number of options for you. You've got the Stratologer now is about the size of a postage stamp, or a couple of postage stamps, actually. You've got the shoot release, and you've got all these nifty things that, you know, you can stuff into a BT-60 body tube rocket, and or smaller now, and have dual deploy. And that was not the case when I first started messing around with this in mid-power. And in fact, the first altimeter that actually fit into the rocket without any components scraping around against the insides was the previous Stratologer model, not the Stratologer CF, mm-hmm. but the one before that, that just fit in there. And the next problem I ran into is by the time you stuff a 9-volt battery in there to all that, the rocket becomes really heavy, especially by the time you do all this dual deploy stuff. So I needed to save some weight. So what I started using were those little A23 alkaline batteries, which were like little 12-volt batteries. They're nice and light, and that fit the bill. Worked great all summer long until things got cold. And and when things get cold, those batteries just don't have any oomph to them anymore, and they have a tendency to kind of like give out on you. So I had that happen once and going into the winter with one of my dual deploy rockets, and I didn't think anything of it. I figured, doggone battery, you know. It was only like 50 degrees, so temperature didn't really cross my mind. And I just chucked it off to like, you get weird stuff happening every now and then. And so into another long summer and then some flying the A23 battery again, and everything was going fine until the first level one, rocket, Nezuru. I actually stuck a pair of A23s in there figuring, you know, if one is a little flaky like I ran into last time, the other one would be okay. And I diode auctioneered it in there. So if one goes weak, the other one takes over, you know. So launch the rocket, and it goes up looking great, and it comes down, and no shooty, no nothing. It just kind of...
Oh, no.
The first event happened thanks to the motor charge as a backup, but after that, nothing. And the rocket just kind of slammed into the ground, and all kinds of pieces flying everywhere, and it's like, ugh.
So sadness.
Yes, sadness. But Nezuru was like really overbuilt, so it was amazing how little damage actually happened to it. From there I was like, well, let me look at the data. And then the data, you see, was pretty obvious, and it looked just like the previous situation, except on this day it was even colder than it was before. There was actually the ground was actually frozen. So it was very obvious. Everything was working great until the electronics went to say, fire the charges now. And the batteries just kind of rolled over, and you could see it on the voltage graph on the Stratologer voltage, 12 volts, 12 volts, 12 mm-hmm. volts, 0 volts. And over about a second, it recovered slowly back to 12 volts again, and then went to fire the next charge, 0 volts, and it slowly recovered back up again. So a coworker of mine was looking over the data with me, and he was like, what kind of battery are you using? One of these. Alkaline battery in cold weather? Are you crazy? Like, well, most people do use alkaline batteries. What kind of batteries are they using? 9-volt batteries. That can't possibly work. Well, people do it all the time, and it works. And so he goes back and goes off and does some research and comes back, and it's like, they're lucky that it works. Here's the data. And this guy can find anything. You can put a top secret government document in a vault, and he will find a way to get access to it. And so he had stuff from like EverReady and Duracell and, you know, Rayovac and all their testing parameters on the batteries in the performance versus temperature. And so even with a 9-volt, according to him, you're kind of like on that hairy edge in cold weather. And so one of our members in our club, who's also a model airplane guy, mentioned to me lithium polymer batteries. And I knew of those batteries, but I wasn't going to go there because it was like all I read was scary things about them, you know, blowing up and all this stuff. And so he came back pretty much with the same thing, lithium polymer batteries. And so that started my research into that whole thing before I jumped in and did it. And I learned a whole lot, and I've had a lot of experience with them through all kinds of things, and I can give some advice. And what I did is I went back and I kind of refreshed my knowledge on these. So I augmented with some stuff I saw before in the web on lithium polymer, and I went back and refreshed my memory. And they make great lists for you, and I'll have links in the show notes for that so you can get to the same websites. Between the two, they cover the ground pretty good. So before I jump in, I would say, before you think the lithium polymer batteries are really scary, just what most people are not aware of is how we are surrounded by them now, especially these days. They're everywhere. They're in many phones, actually. A lot of them use lithium ions, but there are a lot of lithium polymer batteries in phones now. And just about any little models using them, whether it's a drone or a little helicopter drone or whatever, they're all using lithium polymer batteries. And what makes them safe for most people is that they've got these little microcomputers built onto the battery pack that monitors all these conditions I'm about to tell you about. And if there's anything flaky with the battery, it disconnects and turns it off. And it doesn't mean that you don't have the problems. I have my Sony Xperia Z phone, which I don't really use much anymore, Z3. I don't use it at all. It was just kind of sitting around. I used it for, you know, testing Android stuff with it. And so it had an issue. I found out that it has a lithium polymer battery, and I'll get to that as how I found out in a moment here. So so we're going to just jump right into this here. First and foremost, the number one golden rule, make sure you're using a charger made to charge lithium polymer batteries packs.
Absolutely.
Do not use anything else to charge them. You know, be leery of home-built things. Use one and pay a good buck. So you can get a decent one for about $30-$40. Do it. One of the things that they do is if, especially if it's more than one cell, like my rockets, my little ones use two-cell lithium polymer batteries, and the bigger ones use three-cell because I just kind of standardize on 12 volts inside the rocket for power. So I have a three-cell in those. One of the things you want this charger to be able to do is to monitor the voltage between cells. And each cell in there should be about 4.2 volts. And if you get the right charger, it will monitor that for you. And you want them to be balanced out the same from cell to cell. The websites that give you the safety things don't really talk about what happens if they're imbalanced. It's a bad thing because they run them in series. So the positive of one cell is connected to the negative of the other, and the positive of that cell is connected to the negative of the other, and then it goes to your rockets for a three cell. So if one of them is not balanced right, and one of them is, you know, say 4.2 and 3.8 and 4.2 volts, which is really bad, the 3.8 one will start, when you're running your model, will start to charge from the other two batteries, and it's not at a controlled rate, and that could make that middle cell fail. And when these batteries fail, that's when the dangerous stuff happens. So they tend to kind of go up in a poof. If you're lucky, a poof of smoke. But typically, a jet of fire comes out of them. And once you get one going, the others will go off too. So that's the part you have to be careful. And that's why you want a good charger. And a good charger will check for that condition when you're charging them. And you will see weird readings when the battery's not right. Just don't use it. Just don't. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Just dispose of the battery. And if you have to do that, the way you do that is you throw it in a bucket of salt water outside, away from anything that can burn, just in case it decides to go off. And speaking of, if these batteries do burn, they're a chemical fire. So you want to have a Class D fire extinguisher somewhere, or sand to throw them in, or something like that. Or just keep them away from anything flammable. Put them on concrete, on ceramic, in a ammo box. Anything that doesn't burn, that's a good place to store them. So that's if something goes wrong. And this is going to sound scary now when I'm talking about stuff, but I'm laying out safety. Like when you talk about rocket safety, when you go through all the things that can happen flying a rocket, it makes the hobby seem scary, especially if you talk about sparky motors and all the crazy things that can happen. But those are like outliers. You know, there are many sparky motors that fly all the time without incident because people respect the sparkies, and they make sure you don't have conditions that'll give you a problem with the sparkies. So you just like you respect the sparkies, you respect the lipos, and they'll do well for you. So another sign of a decent charger is that you can set the charger in storage mode. So it'll discharge the battery to somewhere about 3.8 volts, which is a pretty decent voltage to store it at. You don't want to store it at full capacity because it shortens the life of the battery. And if you have any problems, like something shorts them out or something like that, you don't have a fully charged battery. A good charger will have a storage mode for these batteries if you're not going to use them for a while. So that's another sign of a good one. And try to get something from a reputable manufacturer like Turnigy or something like that. A no-name knockoff from some island out somewhere and who knows where is probably not a good idea for a charger.
At least they're surrounded by salt water.
Yeah. They don't have to worry about that. They just throw it in the ocean. So those are some safety things there with charging. Another side note to charging now, and this is going to get back to my phone in a second. if your LiPo battery starts swelling up for some reason, and I don't know if you've noticed this, Gene, when I'm in the field, when I pull a battery out, mm-hmm. one of the things I'm always doing is I'm pushing on them just to make sure nothing's swelling up. Because if they start swelling up and the package becomes like spongy, that's not good. That's when it goes into the bucket of salt water. And by the way, the bucket of salt water, you throw it in there for several days, maybe like a week or something like that. Then after it's been soaking in that salt water for a while, then you can dispose of it like regular garbage. But you don't want to throw it in the garbage with any kind of a charge on it. You do not want to have that happen. Or you can just be safe, throw it in a bucket of salt water and take it to a local disposal place if you want to be safe about it, because they've got all the safety protocols for that kind of stuff.
So what does happen when a battery swells? What does that mean?
Usually, the lithium polymer batteries, they're the dielectric inside, I'm probably not using the right term for it, but that's what jumps in mind. Basically, the chemicals that store the charge are actually stored under pressure. So as you charge and discharge them, the pressure changes. So when they're charging, the pressure is a little bit higher inside the substance than if it's discharged. And the way they're packaged, it holds that pressure in. So if this package is swelling, that means things are leaking, and that's not good. You definitely want to discontinue use of that. So that's what that's all about. And I get to jump back to my phone real quick here. I found out that the Sony Xperia Z3 phones, probably the other ones as well, are using lithium polymer batteries. Why? One day I went to pick up the phone after it's been sitting there on the desk totally dead for a while to charge it so I can do some Android tests for the podcast, actually. And I noticed that the back of the thing was like no longer down. It was like pushed away. So it's like first thought, oh, that's how these phones are stuck together. And the second thought is, this is not good. So I pried the back off of it, and there's a big old lithium polymer battery that was swelling up. So it's like, okay, time to disconnect this from this board here and remove this puppy. So I did that. So that's how I found it. So everyone's surrounded by lithium polymer batteries, but they just don't know it because it's hidden from you. So I thought I'd bring that phone story back into the picture. So anyway. Another thing that can cause a problem with the batteries when they swell is if you have a mishap. If you're in a model car, plane, helicopter, rocket, if you have a crash or something like that, that could damage the battery too and puncture something somewhere inside, and that could also cause it to swell up as well. I did have a rocket that came in ballistic because it had a bonus delay. It had apogee that didn't go off until the rocket was burled into the ground. And in the nose cone was a lithium polymer battery that was running the LEDs because I was doing a test flight for a night launch. And they got it out of the ground. The LED part took a lot of damage, but they were still glowing. And so I was like, ooh, the battery's still running. Hopefully it's
I remember
not.
That.
Yeah. So I pulled it out. It's like, okay, the battery is not quite swollen, but let me just disconnect that and put this over here. and sure enough, later on, it did start swelling up. So into the bucket of salt water it went. So you were there for that, Gene.
I was. I remember that. It was pretty swampy that day.
Yes. So that's one of those things to be careful of. If you have a rocket damage or crash or whatever, just kind of pay close attention to the battery after that.
Can I ask a really beginner question?
Sure. Go right ahead.
Okay. So I keep hearing about these LiPo batteries.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to myself, okay, well, I know what kind of connector like a 9-volt has, mm-hmm. and I know what size case like a AA or a B or C or D comes in. If you, do they come with different kinds of connectors or different kinds of cases or different kinds of, do you know what I'm saying? Like you can't just swap out a 9-volt for a LiPo. Is that true, or do you have to have
true? Most of the LiPo batteries for model planes and whatnot, which is what I use for rockets, are using what's called JST connectors, which are little red 2-pin connectors. So you'll need a male and a female connector for connecting the battery to things, and the battery I think has a female connector on it, so you'll have to have a male connector on the other. Now you can make it so you can swap out a 9-volt battery with that by custom making your own. You can buy the JST connectors with pigtails on them, and you can solder them mm-hmm. to a 9-volt battery cap or whatever, and that way you can alternately power your electronics with a 9-volt battery. I've got one where I've got a 12-volt power, like a power brick that you plug into the wall with a JST connector on the end, so I can test out the electronics and all that using that.
Yeah, I typically use JSTs in all of my dual deploy electronics just in case, because I have some LiPos, but I've never put them in the rocket itself, just because I go with tried and true pretty much, which is the 9-volt. But I do have that there so that at some point in time I can just swap out the JST and stick a LiPo in there and just, you know, use a little Velcro strap to put the battery down onto the sled. So it's JSTs are easy to find. Any hobby store has them. You can get them for like a bag of 25 of them for a few bucks.
Yeah. So they're pretty easy to work with. I like them a lot.
Now, the other thing that you might want to mention is you're talking a little bit about charging and the load balancing. Mm-hmm. So if you look at a LiPo battery, not only is there a JST connector, but there's this other connector on there.
Yes. There's a little, typically a little white connector that looks sort of like the style of connector that's on the Stratalogger for data connections, but a little bit beefier. And those are the connectors used for charge balancing. So if you have a charger that only has a JST on it and it's supposedly for charging multi-cell batteries, just run the other direction as fast as your feet can carry you. You want to use one that's a load balancing, which uses the other connector that's on the battery. And they plug in the special jacks on there for the type of battery there are, for like 1 cell, 2 cell, 3 cell, 4 cell. But, you know, so that's what that other connector is. So thanks for bringing that question up.
And could you talk a little bit about the advantages of, like, what's the difference between a 2 cell and a 3 cell? Is it just voltage or?
It's voltage primarily.
Just voltage? Okay, because I always wondered about that, because I have a couple of those 2 cells. After you were showing those off, I went out and got a few Turnagy ones, and I've been sitting on them. But and in your experience, you don't have any problems in the cold weather, which I've seen. But they carry a consistent charge all the way through temperatures and stuff, huh?
Yeah, mainly because one of the reasons why these lithium polymer batteries can be kind of unwieldy at times is that they can pack a lot of current. So those little 2-cell batteries that I have can easily sink 25 amps at that voltage.
That's the thing that I have the hardest time wrapping my mind around it, is because it's a very small little battery. I mean, its weight is a few grams. It's a 2-cell LiPo thing, and it doesn't look like it's going to do squat. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the biggest thing that's kept me away from it, is because, how can something that small have that much power?
I watched somebody jump start a car with a LiPo. It was a little bit big. It wasn't the tiny one like that. It was a bigger one. But somebody's battery ran down in the field, and they pulled out their LiPo battery and stuck it on the battery terminals. All right, try it now. Started a car with it. So those puppies can pack quite a bit of current.
Wow.
But not from a little one like I'm talking about. The little Turnagy, it'll probably smoke the battery if you tried that. But now for... like the kind like you have, Gene, that brick that you got, I think it was something like that.
Okay, yeah, 5,000 mAh, I think, 5 cell.
So,
I have a, I have a radio controlled car, and I have a couple of LiPos for that. And that one brick is starting to swell, so I'm thinking, get this, it's time.
Yes, it's time. And each one of those cells, by the way, they're 4.2 volts each, fully charged. So as you stack more cells, and you just double, you know, add 4.2 volts per cell in each one. So, a 3-cell one is pretty close to 12 volts.
Now, when I was working for a certain computer company named after a fruit that shall be nameless, we had to go through a lot of battery safety stuff. And the one thing that they did that I thought was interesting is, just as a possible safety thing, is in the tech room, we had to have a 5-pound bucket of clean sand, so that if we did see any kind of thermal event, we would immediately dump the sand on it as fast as possible to stop the reaction.
Same thing with the LiPo.
We're also told to be careful of any kind of noxious fumes. Now, are you seeing those? Because some of the laptops did have LiPos in them, and they did swell, and they did the typical things that you're going to see. They switched over to lithium ion later, but there's some models that had LiPos in them, and we were told to be careful of noxious fumes that could be coming out of that.
Yes.
So keep a well ventilated area if you have an event.
Yes, some of them could, as part of the swelling, could actually rupture at some point, and they just let these very highly flammable fumes out of it, and yeah, noxious as well. And that's also where, you know, where some of the danger happens, because once you get one puncturing, if it doesn't go off, the gas it's venting is very, is highly flammable. So if another cell goes off, it'll set not only that cell on fire, but then the fumes around it would go on fire too. So when you're charging these batteries, you want to definitely have, as part of your safety protocol, you want to charge them inside of a ceramic container or inside of concrete, or just one of those LiPo battery charger bags. So in case something happens, mm-hmm. it contains the, you know, the flames. Again, safety measures.
Yeah. Now, it's rare that that those events happen, but it is right. something to be concerned about. And right. as long as you follow those protocols, I'm so close to using them, but right now I'm ready to go with them after hearing you talk about it, because I've seen you fly them, I've seen you work in all kinds of weather where my 9 volts wouldn't cut it.
And before I forget too, on the topic of battery charge, do not let your batteries go lower than 3 volts. You can buy little safety circuits that will monitor the voltage of the battery, and if it sees them drop below that danger zone, it'll just shut the battery off. It'll just kill the power to whatever's on the battery. Having said that, now, most of your rocket flights, you're never going to run the battery down on an afternoon of rocket flying, but do check them, you know. So stick them on the charger, see where they're at percentage-wise, and if they need to be topped off, top them off. And then when you're not using them, do the old storage mode on the charger.
And some good tips.
Yeah. Let's see here. The other thing, too, is never overcharge a LiPo battery. And never, ever trickle charge them. So if you have a LiPo battery charger that says trickle charge, run the other direction. Surefire way to cause yourself some serious problems. And
the charger that I have has different voltages going into it.
Yes.
What's the best currents? Voltage? Different currents, yeah. Sorry.
Okay, so what you're going to do is you never charge the lithium polymer battery pack at a rate over 1 times the battery's rated capacity. So it has this little C, like 20C and things like that. Mm-hmm. That's the key. And they're a little, and if you want to know what that means, that's like kind of an amperage thing, but it's not a linear graph, but there are charts, and I'll try to find that too, that you can go to online that can tell you what that C rating number equates to, and something that's a little more meaningful for people that are used to using batteries. But in any case, you don't want to go over what that battery's rated. And I typically just go lower. It takes a little longer, but it's safer.
Okay.
So that's what I do.
Yeah, because I don't want to put it at the max to like, oh, I'll get it in 10 seconds.
Yeah, you know,
I figure that could be bad.
Yeah, that's potentially asking
but you
for
don't. Yeah, but you don't want to trickle charge them either.
Right,
so.
Right. Exactly. Another thing is, be careful. Do not ever short the two leads together on the battery, the positive and negative, which could happen in a crash. So you want to be very careful about that. If you do, you know, recover your rocket from a crash and you think the LiPo battery might have that condition where it could be a short, just give it a good minute or so before you go over there. So, just to be
safe. Sound advice.
Yeah. Because like I said, these things can easily sink about 20 amps or so, the little ones. And that's a lot of current, and which on the dead short, that will definitely cause them to go off at some point. So when you're working with them, just do not short them, which is what I'm experimenting, which is why I have the wall wart or the wall power blister pack with the JST connector on it, because there's times I'm messing with stuff and I accidentally short things out while I'm working on it. I do not want that to be a LiPo. So I'd rather it be a little 1 amp wall thing or 500 milliamp wall wart at whatever voltage I'm trying to run it at, because that's way safer than than the LiPo batteries and when you're experimenting around on the bench. So
with proper conditioning and charging and keeping them stored, you've been getting a lot of life out of those things. What's the average life of the batteries that you're seeing?
They typically, a typical LiPo battery will last about 300 charges. Mine don't last anywhere near that much because they tend to sit for a while. So I'll get maybe a couple of years of rocket flights out of them before I notice something weird going on with them. So, but if you're using them all the time, the rule of thumb is about 300 charges. And when you're charging and using them, they have a pretty wide temperature range, but you don't want to have them in stored below 0 degrees Celsius or 50 degrees Celsius max. So 50 degrees Celsius, pretty hot. That's like desert hot.
Yeah, I was going to say. That's
just as a
toasty
reference. Yeah. Or you can think of the Midnight Oil song when he's talking about the steaming 45 degrees. It's like a hot desert day, you know.
45 degrees.
Yeah, as a kid, I was like, that's not hot. What is he talking about? But, you know, he's talking about Celsius. So anyway, yeah, that's the range that they operate in. If it's outside of that, just be leery about using them. And the other thing, too, when you're charging your batteries, never leave them sitting around without you being there. Don't just plug them in a charger and walk away and cook dinner or something. You definitely want to be around and keep an eye on it. And it's not like you're going to be watching paint dry, because they charge within a couple of minutes, 2 or 3 minutes. So yeah, definitely do not walk away. And another piece of advice from the websites, though, that they brought up, and it's a good point, is do not store your batteries inside of your car, and do not charge them inside of your car. Now, I never thought about doing that, but when I saw that, it's like, yeah, you know, that's a good point. You should put that out there.
Kind of makes sense.
Yeah. So,
man, well, especially on the field,
these things are like gremlins. You know, don't feed them after midnight. Don't get them wet. Never let them see a sweat.
Well, you know, so much of rocketry is like that too. So, you know,
yeah, we're kind of used to that, aren't we?
Yeah. So, you know, it's a matter of just kind of like, you know, paying attention to them, and just keep that in mind. And the last point, I mean, there's more to it, and I'll give you links to these websites where they talk about it in detail. So I thought I'd give you a nice jump start on that here on the show. I figure people would be interested.
Yeah, I see
in
what
that.
You did there.
Yeah. See? Clever.
But huh? if used properly, though, they're good. They work and they're reliable.
Yes, it's like gasoline. When used properly, it's a great tool.
Or Windex.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, you think about gasoline, there's like, that's, you know, that stuff is scary too. You know, it's like filling a lawnmower, you know, on a day, and you set the can down. If you don't put the cap on right away, and you walk up to it and you realize, wait a minute, you can see the fumes coming out the can and going across the ground. And all it would take would be a match to drop right there, and then, you know, it's like.
Well, think about going to a launch. How many motors do you carry in your car to a launch, whether they ammonium perchlorate or black powder? I mean, you know. You routinely handle that stuff,
right?
And it's explosive. At least the black powder is, anyway.
Right. So anyway, that's another example. Black powder that we work with the rocketry. You know, that stuff we can write a whole Bible on how dangerous that is, but we use it all the time in the hobby. And because we all respect the black powder, you very rarely hear of any problems with it. So. I mean, we all know you don't open up the can of black powder and light your cigarette and start pouring in, you know. just don't be stupid.
And start charging your light bulb in your car.
Right.
I'm sure somebody does that.
Probably. And but the last point I want to make here before we leave out is, and this is something else I didn't think about, but this website from Jessica Farrar, she says, always pack your light bulbs in your carry-on bag and never in your checked baggage while traveling on an airplane, because it's the law. So I never thought about that one. Not that I've thought about traveling with my LiPo batteries, but that's a good point. So yeah, there's plenty more. I'll give you the links to these, and you can look over them and be informed whether you've been using them a lot or not, or sitting on the fence like Gene was. You know, little primer there on LiPo batteries for your rockets.
Nice.
Yes.
All right.
Well, there you go. That went longer than I thought it would. and there's still a whole lot more, but I just gleaned over the top things.
I was going to say, there's
things,
a ton more.
Yeah, there's a ton more. I just kind of gleaned over the top points that really jump out at me as something that every person getting into that should know. Well, cool. We just kind of wrapped up our first episode of Season 4 of The Rocketry Show. So...
Yay.
We've all learned something from each other on this show. So hopefully we've taught you something too.
And what'd you learn from me tonight?
I learned that you had buckets of sand in the fruit store that you used to work at.
The fruit stand.
In case Fair you enough. Had problems with your batteries. So, yeah, there you go.
Done. So, I stand down now.
And on that wacky note, what's your favorite saying there, Gene?
Keep your eyes in the skies.
All righty. I am Woosh.
I'm Boom.
And I'm
what? We'll see you next time here on the Rocket Tree Show. We'd like to remind you that if you really like the show, please leave a nice rating on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Patreon, and anywhere else you get this program from. Your vote really helps us to gain more exposure to new listeners. So thank you very much.